She sat right down on the sofa. I said, where have you been? I've been waiting for you. Cause last night I had something so good. These days get so long and I got nothing to do. I've been hanging around this town. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Talking BS. It's your boy Corrado. Decided to start off a little Counting Crows hanging around, because that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be hanging around all the Boston sports teams. Well, except for the Celtics. We're not doing Celtics. We buried them where they fell a couple weeks ago. Done with them. I'm going to touch on all three teams today that aren't the Celtics. We're going to do Red Sox, a little Patriots stuff, just a couple of their draft picks, and then we'll do a small, quick Bruins preview for the Stanley Cup. But I just want to get into the Red Sox real quick because I didn't think I was going to be talking about them very much this summer. When I first started the podcast earlier this season, it was a shit show, train wreck. They were dead last place. They weren't doing anything well. They weren't hitting. They weren't pitching. They weren't field. They weren't doing anything. And it was not that it was shocking, because you know the whole World Series hangover, and they quote unquote took it easy in spring training, and they wanted to ramp people up. And that was all bullshit. Guys were just tired, and you know, it seems like a long off season because winter seems so long, but it's really not for those guys. Those guys have a pretty quick turnaround too. So it wasn't really that surprising, but it's still frustrating to watch. Especially with the signings and everything. They gave Eovaldi a big bag, they give Chris Sale a big bag. And it sucks to watch those guys struggle. Eovaldi's on the DL. He probably won't be back till almost the All-Star break. The exact diagnosis of it is something scary. It was like bodies in his elbow. I was like, what? It said like that's what it said. It was like foreign bodies in right elbow. It's like that's not good. That's not a good thing. So yeah, he's out. But somehow, some way, the Red Sox have come back. They're, I think they're 25 and 23 now. So just above 500. So they're not back. I believe they're still 5.5 games out, as of this recording right now. I think they're actually playing. Let me throw the TV in. This will be fun. We can do a little live but not live following of the Red Sox game right now, because they're doing day baseball up in Toronto. Let's see. 1-1, bottom of the fourth. All right. Okay. Anyways, so yeah, they got a young kid in right now, Weber, who's just like a long reliever. He's wearing a spring training jersey. Oh, and he just gave up a big fly ball out to left. Okay, looked like a bomb off the bat, but it wasn't. Yeah, this kid's relatively new, very young. Like I said, he's wearing a spring training number, so number 65. Tough look. But we'll see how he does. So yeah, Eovaldi's out. What else? The bullpen stinks. I meant to get to that way sooner than I did. The 4.5 minutes in, we already are. The bullpen's been atrocious. The new guy, Walden and Barnes, have been okay this year. You could even say Walden's been great if you look at his stats. But the rest of them are just, they're useless. I don't trust any of them. I don't trust any of them to in any situation with any leverage whatsoever. I mean, Thornburg, Brazier, Workman, Hembry gives up a fucking bomb last night. And the biggest problem is there's no definitive closer. There is no closer. At the beginning of the year, it was Barnes. They were like, we're doing Barnes, and then it wasn't Barnes, and it was Brazier, and it was there's no closer. The Red Sox don't have a closer. And that's just so important to the backbone of a bullpen. I know ours from last year is a free agent and wants way too much money. But at the end of the day, the closer is the backbone. I know he didn't play well or pitch well in the postseason last year, but he got you there. He got you there with a bunch of huge saves and huge wins in the regular season to get you to that 108 wins that you had last year. He was a huge part of that. And part of establishing a winning culture is winning close games, winning one-run games, winning games just those two things. One-run games and just close games in general that you have to have. That's a big part of the better teams in Major League Baseball. So, I mean, the definitive closer thing is just... It's just a big problem. It's a huge problem. That... Because it's a different type of guy. It's like goalies in hockey or soccer or linemen in football. It's just a different... They're just different people. Their brains are wired differently. They take things certain ways. They have switches, like on and off switches. You know, their adrenaline has to get going and all that stuff. So in order to harness that and to go into an inning where you're getting the save opportunity, there's a lot that goes into that. So if you don't know that you're going to be that guy on that particular night, doubt starts to seep in rather than like adrenaline of getting pumped up to save the game. Cause it's like, cause once you get one of these guys in there, the Thornbergs or the Braziers, whoever's going in, you know, it's like, oh, I hope I don't fuck this up like Brazier did last night. Like, what if, you know, then the media will be on me. Then the guys will be on me. But it's just very, it's not conducive to sustaining winning is pretty much what I'm trying to get at. Now, I'm not saying to go back out and, you know, sign a free agent closer. That's not what needs to happen, but something, whether it's one of these guys just comes on in the end, because, again, it's still very early. It's almost June, but this is a long grind of a season. And I think it's imperative that either somebody emerge or somebody be found off a scrap heap somewhere, which how many closers are hanging out, you know, down in the minors somewhere or over, you know, over in like the NL West, you know, there's not a lot of them, but just give me a guy who can throw 100. There's more guys now than ever who are throwing 100. Isn't there some guy in Cincinnati throws like 105? It's somewhere in the Midwest. One of those teams out in the Midwest has a pitcher who throws like 105, and it's not Chapman. It's insane. We just need a guy who throws gas, million miles an hour, and that's how you do it. That's how we did it last year. So, I mean, I don't know. That's what we did last year with Kimbrel. I mean, Kimbrel threw the ball 100 miles an hour, just blown people away. I mean, he'd walk the bases loaded first, trying to find spots for his curveball, but then he said, oh, that's right, I throw it 102. I'm just going to get it right over the plate and dare him to hit it. But yeah, so that's my little two cents on the state of the Red Sox right now. I'm cautiously optimistic, especially with the way the boys have been hitting lately. They've been slightly more consistent. I'm really excited that Devers is coming around. Really excited. He's such a good young player. He was leading the league in batting, up until this week. He's dropped quite a bit. He's had a rough couple games, but he's still hitting the ton out of the ball. He's still hitting homers. He's still hitting extra base hits. Just his average has gone down a little bit. Not a big deal. Chavis, this new kid, absolutely in love with him. They need to find him a permanent home, whether it be second or at first base right now, where he's playing while this game's going on. They have him at first today. So I absolutely love him. Love his compete. Love how we can play him anywhere. Love the pop in his bat. His swing is so nut. It's so hard to find a pretty right-handed swing. It's so rare. The lefty swing is so much more natural, you know, like the Griffies, Ted Williams, even nowadays, like, I don't know, who's got a sweet-ass lefty swing in the league right now? Oh, God, I'm blanking. I don't know, Robinson Cano, even though I'm pretty sure he's suspended for PEDs right now. Regardless, the lefty swing is usually the sweetest, but I love Chavis's swing from the right-handed side of the plate. I love it. All right, so we're going to stop there on the Sox. We'll get right into the Patriots. We're just going to do a little draft stuff. We're only going to do a few of them because, I mean, I don't think you guys want to hear me talk for like 2 hours about the 7th round pick who is like number 943 overall, who went to, I don't know, East New Mexico, Mississippi, Central Florida State. I don't think you guys want that. So, number one with a bullet, N'Keal Harry. First round, pick 32. Let's go. First receiver taken by the Patriots in the first round since friggin' Terry Glenn back in 96. Back when they wouldn't let the tuna pick up the groceries. Remember that? Fucking people who are over 30. God. Let's see who else. So no, not who else. So we're gonna break him down a little bit. So the word on him is he's a little slower than the best guy who was in the draft, or the consensus of the best guy in the draft, DK Metcalf. But the Patriots scouting report on him says he has great hands. He catches the ball with him, which is one of Bill Belichick and almost, honestly, any football coach from any ranks' biggest pet peeve. Catch the fucking ball with your hands. Catch it with your hands. Don't let it hit your in between the two numbers on the front of your jersey. Dorsett. Demaryius Thomas. Sorry. Sorry. Good. Springtime allergies. So, yeah, we have a guy who can catch the ball with his hands other than Julian Edelman, which is nice. I think he's going to be a huge, huge factor in the red zone and in third down situations, obviously, from Gronk being gone or while he's gone. I'm woke on Gronk. I think he might be back Halloween time-ish. I think he might take the first half of the season off and get the itch and come back. I don't know if he's allowed to do that. I don't know what the rules are for being retired / staying retired. But I don't know. I just feel like he's gonna get the itch. I think it's all he knows. Anyways, so yes, but while he's gone, whether that's for one game, eight games, or forever, I think this kid Harry is gonna go buck wild with Tom Brady as his quarterback. The book on him is he's one of the, even though he's a little slow for a first round wideout, he's one of the best after the catch guys in college football last year. He's also comfortable lining up both outside and in the slot, which is just huge. Patriots wide receivers have to be able to be versatile, need to be able to move around, run motion, jet motion, deep motion, all that stuff. You need to be on the same page, and N'Keal Harry's very used to doing that. He can return punts, he can return kicks. Shit, in his interview right after he found out the Patriots drafted him, he's like, I'll play anywhere. He's like, play scout team, I'll play special teams, it doesn't matter. He's like, I'm here to help people win. Here to help the Patriots win. The next guy we got off the board was Jo'wan Williams. Jo'wan Howard, J-U-W-A-N it. No, literally Joe, and then Juan, as in like Juan Gonzalez, and then Williams. Bold strategy for a name. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. I like it. He was a second round pick, 45 overall. Kid's a beast, 6'3", 211. I mean, he's getting Bailey comps on his size and his athletic ability. He's a sick freak. He towers over like half the friggin' guys that he plays corner against. Came from Vanderbilt, very smart. He's getting added to an absolutely ridiculous defensive backfield that was. It was kind of the backbone of the defense last year. You know, the McCourty twins. J.C. Jackson emerged last year, especially at the end of last year, into the playoffs. And, of course, you got the all-pro stud. Stephon Gilmore might be pound for pound one of the – I mean, well, they voted him. He was all-pro. He was first-team all-pro last year at corner. So that's what – you're adding this young stud to a – defensive backfield that already has arguably the number one or number two best corner in the league. I'll take that. I'll absolutely take that. And then we have the third round pick was pick number 77, Chase Winovich. If there was ever a fucking name and just a guy with this guy's face that Belichick would pick, this is the this is the guy Bill would build. This is the football player. Like 6'3", 258, has been called a ballerina, just meaning he has perfect balance. He's always has a high motor. He's fast. His technique and his fundamentals are like perfect. Apparently, he's like a metronome. He's always in the right spot. He's always around the ball. I mean, he's got the long, like, he's kind of got a Clay Matthews feel to him, just with his hair and his personality, and just, he looks like a savage. He literally looks like he'll run through a brick wall for you. And that's exactly what Belichick wants. And it's nice for that linebacking core to get a little pump from this fountain of youth. That middle linebacker, they've been inconsistent and kind of injury prone these last couple seasons, and I think this young kid coming up and injecting himself into that core, I just think it's gonna do wonders. I think it's gonna do wonders for that defense that was already playing at a high level last year, especially when it mattered. And then the very last guy I want to get to is the QB they took. I didn't hate that they took a QB, honestly. Number four, Jarrett Stidham. Well, it wasn't number four. It was in round four. Pick 133, Jarrett Stidham. from Auburn. He was a transfer from Baylor. He had to sit out a year and play it again, like fucking Western, Eastern Illinois, New Mexico University, whatever. And then he played kind of underwhelming year at Auburn. He was 8-5, which is eh. I mean, Auburn wants to be competing for the national championship every year, and they want to beat Alabama every year. It's a lot of expectations for a kid like that, coming from Baylor and coming off really not playing competitive Division I football. Is a big ask for him to come in there and, you know, be this transformative player. But he did have a lot of the tools that Belichick looks for in a quarterback. Now, am I saying, is he going to be the next Jimmy G, and is he going to come in and start a quarterback controversy if Brady, God forbid, gets hurt or suspended? Which shouldn't happen, but let's just say in some crazy universe it does. I wouldn't worry about it too much. I think he's just a good, solid backup. And the best thing he can do, because Brady's not a big rah-rah, take you under his wing, you know, here's the ingredients to take my job from me. He didn't do it with Jimmy G, who was actually legit and really got it and had the intangibles to play quarterback in this league, it looked like. I don't think he's taking this kid under his wing and, you know, giving him, quote-unquote, as he put it for himself, the answers to the test. I think this kid's going to have to do a lot of that with his eyeballs. He's going to have to look and see what, you know, see what time Tom gets there, see what Tom does during meetings, before meetings, after them. Maybe not go, like, line by line with him for workouts and stuff, because he has his own TB12 thing and all that. But as far as reps in practice and in the film room, I feel like he's going to need to be his own teacher by watching what Tom does and by mimicking or learning from whatever Tom is doing. And if he does that, I think he should be fine. Whether he's the heir apparent here or not, it's probably not, but I mean, let's see. Let's see what happens. So that's going to be it for the Patriots draft. I'm just going to give you guys a couple minutes on the Stanley Cup final, which the fucking Bruins are in. Let's go. Against the St. Louis Blues. St. Louis Blues. First time since 1970. Hate to see it. Hate to see it. Because I'm seeing another sweep. Just like in 1970. Now I say that, but should we be worried about anyone? I mean, sure you should. Sure. Tarasenko, Swartz, Pietrangelo, even though he's a defenseman, he can still score. They have some firepower over there. They have some offense over there on that team. And it's not just that. These guys are huge. These are some big guys. I'm going to give you a couple. I'm just going to run down just quick just the pure sizes of some of their defensemen. 6'6", 230. 6'4", 220. 6'1", 216. 6'4", 215. 6'3", 212. These guys are monsters. They're absolute they're just as big in bruising as Columbus was, if not bigger and more bruising. These guys are going to grind you. They're going to grind you down. They're going to get you stuck in the corner. There's going to be 4, 5, 6-man scrums along the half wall, and we're going to have to win some of them. and it's gonna be tough. This year, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, again, I said sweep earlier. That's not really, I don't really mean that. Because I honestly don't know how many games. I don't really want to give. I think the Bruins win this series. I just don't. I don't really have a good beat on the Blues because they haven't played consistently while I've been watching. Like, the few times that I've watched them, I've seen them get their asses kicked. And then other times, like, I watched them clinch a couple nights ago, and they were flying around the ice, scoring goals, taking advantage of every single San Jose mistake. Every turnover that San Jose made, every bad turnover, they were making them pay. St. Louis was making San Jose pay for all their dumb screw-ups, burying goals. Their new young goalie, Binnington, is... That might be the X factor. It might not even be Tuukka Rask. It might be Binnington, the young kid, because he doesn't really know the moment right now. He's just kind of he's the same. Not the same. His numbers obviously aren't as good as Tuukka Rask's in the playoffs. Nobody's are. But he's in that same type of zone. He's feeling good about himself. He's feeling himself a little bit. And I just want to see if this moment is going to be too gigantic for him, or if he's just so young and dumb that he's just like, yeah, I'm just playing some good hockey. I think, I know I said so far I've gone from Bruins sweep to I don't know how many games, but I think the Bruins are going to win, to I'll finish it up. I will do gentlemen sweep, Bruins in five. How about that? Meet in the middle. We'll meet in the middle. Don't be shocked if the Bruins lose one of the first games at home, though. Don't be shocked. Don't be shocked if it's 1-1 going to St. Louis. I wouldn't be shocked by that in one bit. But, again, Bruins in five. I just think, again, they're better, more skilled, deeper, more experience. I think they're just overall better. And if they lose this, it will be one of the biggest letdowns of this run of championships that we've had. It might rocket itself up into, like, second place. Like, if they blow this opportunity with the not having to play Ovi, not having to play Crosby in Pittsburgh, not having to play even Thornton from San Jose with that team had bigger names known across the NHL with Evander Kane, Eric Carlson, Logan Couture is still the leading scorer in the friggin' playoffs. He hasn't played in 2 days. So, I mean, I don't know. If they don't button this thing up with a nice bow for us and we don't have a parade in a couple weeks, it's going to be one of the bigger letdowns that we've had in the city in quite some time as far as sports goes. So, I'll leave you guys with that. If you guys have any questions or comments or anything like that for me, regarding anything, any sports or maybe other topics other than sports or guests that you guys want to see, anything like that, just hit me up. It's at TalkinBS1 on Twitter, and the Instagram is at _TalkinBS. All right, this was super fun. And I'll talk to you guys next week, probably. Have a good Memorial Day. Never forget. Never forget.